Christ is in our midst.
He is and ever shall be.
St. Luke was not one of the original disciples who accompanied Jesus on his journeys, but thanks to his careful research, of which he tells us, we can accompany Jesus on his journey toward Jerusalem. And so here we are, just as he and his disciples are traveling somewhere on the margins, on the road between Samaria and Galilee, as we are told in the verse before our prescribed gospel reading for the day. Galilee of the Gentiles, as it was known. They're between the bad and the worst, between those on the one hand who are half-breeds and had forsaken traditional Jewish worship, and on the other hand, those who had never known the God of Israel. As they were approaching the village, some village whose name St. Luke doesn't bother to tell us, they hear a cry, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." The cry came from a group of 10 men who were suffering from leprosy, recognizable by most people by their torn garments and unkempt hair, as Moses had commanded, and if not, covering their mouths and warning any unwary person who approached, "Unclean, unclean, come no closer, lest you too become ritually impure and will have to leave your friends and family and join our little company of outcasts." Although it's difficult to be sure exactly what the law of Moses meant by leprosy, and probably not what is nowadays known as leprosy, or more formally as Hansen's disease, it was certainly some kind of skin disease, or perhaps a whole group of skin diseases. But not just skin diseases. Leviticus gives instructions for dealing with leprosy in a garment or in the structure of a house. The garment might have to be burned, the building might have to be torn down and all the debris transported outside the camp. If someone had what seemed to be leprosy, he had to go to one of the priests who may have had the whole list of criteria memorized and would decide whether it really was leprosy or whether it was something harmless. If the priest decided that it was leprosy, then the person with leprosy would have to be quarantined and keep a considerable distance from other people. He would have to remain outside the camp, apart from other members of the community, and warn anyone approaching that he was unclean and that they should stay away, lest they became ritually impure as well. A modern Jewish writer says that if we did observe today what Leviticus describes, it would not be possible to do what Leviticus prescribes, because now there are no Jewish priests and no temple. If lepers were not allowed to associate with those who are free of leprosy, then it often happened that the lepers would get together and form their own little communities. Communities of the excommunicated, as we might call them. And they often stationed themselves not too far from roads, and perhaps not far from the town dump, where they could call out to passing travellers to throw them some food, or perhaps even provide other forms of help. So it's not surprising that one of these groups of lepers should have been near where Jesus and his disciples were passing. In chapter 5, St. Luke reports an incident where, somewhere in the region of Capernaum, far to the north, a leper had approached Jesus, begging to be healed, and Jesus had granted his request, touching him and healing him. Both of them disobeyed the letter of the law, the leper by approaching another person, and Jesus by touching the leper, but showing mercy outranks obedience to the letter of the law. The news of that healing spread far and wide, and perhaps these lepers of whom we have read today had heard the reports and recognized Jesus, not having seen him before, of course, but by his demeanor and his little band of disciples. "That must be Jesus," I imagine one of them saying, "the preacher from Nazareth, just over here in Galilee. I've heard that he has the gift of healing. He's cast out demons, healed people of all kinds of diseases, restored a man's withered hand, healed at least one leper already, just by touching him and saying, 'Be healed,' and even raised people from the dead." Perhaps that is why they dared to address him as Master, a term usually used only by Jesus' disciples. There is no suggestion in the Gospel that on this occasion the lepers approached Jesus, or that he touched them, or even walked towards them. They met Jesus, but not face to face. Rather, they called to him from a distance. Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And from a distance, Jesus spoke to them, but not to pronounce the men healed, but simply to tell them, go and show yourselves to the priests. For what could the priests do? They could not cure leprosy. They could do no more than recognize if it was present. But Jesus' instruction to show themselves to the priests was appropriate. And as they headed in the direction of Jerusalem, following Jesus' instructions, every one of them found that he had been healed, or it certainly seemed that way. The appearance of their skin was quite different now, and they were confident that any priest would be able to tell that they were lepers no longer, that they were no longer excluded from the community. But until they were pronounced healed by the priest, they were still ritually impure and would have had to continue living apart from the rest of the community. And what would happen as they were on their way to Jerusalem to show themselves to the priests? Would the people of the village recognize them, assume that they were still infected, and drive them away? After all, according to the law, they were unclean until the priest said that they were not. Or did they have to bypass the village and as many other populated places as possible? Yet one of those 10 who had been healed did not obey Jesus' command to show himself to the priest. He turned around and came back to Jesus to prostrate himself in front of Jesus and thank him. Why is he praised for not doing what Jesus had told him to do? But the man was not a Jew. He was a Samaritan, and Samaritans and Jews disagreed about the proper place to worship and about the legitimacy of each other's priests. For the Samaritans, the true temple and its priests had been on Mount Gerizim, but that temple no longer existed. This Samaritan was not going to go and show himself to a Jewish priest in Jerusalem, so what was he going to do? Jesus tells the man that his faith has saved him. But all of the men had been healed. So did they not all have faith? What was special about this man? The other 9 had been healed of their leprosy also, and no doubt they were grateful for that. But only this one man, a foreigner, came back to thank the one who had brought about this their healing. Did he perhaps recognize Jesus as the true priest, a greater priest of a different kind altogether than those in Jerusalem? As it says in the Epistle to the Hebrews, Jesus is our great high priest. What did the other 9 former lepers do when they reached Jerusalem and showed themselves to the priests? Did they tell the priests that it was Jesus who had healed them? Did they even recognize that the healing was Jesus doing? After all, he hadn't actually touched them or even said, be made clean. Did they simply say that God had healed them, without mentioning the encounter with Jesus? Were they among the many who cry up to the Lord for help or healing of some kind, but then do not give thanks to the one who delivered them? The man had been doubly disadvantaged, not just a leper, but a Samaritan leper. Now he was doubly blessed. He had already been healed of his leprosy, but now he received an even greater salvation as well, if we assume that the word that's used at the end does mean that greater sense and not just be made well, as our translation has. St. Luke has a special concern for Samaritans. Remember that the model neighbor who takes care of the wounded traveler who had been passed by on the other side by the priest and the Levite was a Samaritan. The man who was not only cleansed but saved was a Samaritan, but when the Lord compares him with the 9 who did not return to give thanks, he refers to him not as this Samaritan, but this foreigner. God had revealed himself in a unique way to Israel, yet not for Israel alone, but for the whole world. in the words of Isaiah the prophet, echoed by St. Simeon, as we heard this morning, I have given you as a light to the nations, to the Gentiles. And as St. Paul wrote in today's epistle reading, God has shown in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Christ. Now this foreigner, banned from the inner court of the temple in Jerusalem, has joined the ranks of those earlier non-Israelites who had become worshippers of Israel's God. Ruth, a Moabite, Naaman, a Syrian, even more foreign than a Samaritan, and himself formerly a leper, who had been cleansed through the work of the prophet Elisha. Jesus had lamented this generation's lack of faith and had already spoken of the wonders wrought by God among non-Israelites through the prophets Elijah and Elisha. Now it was not even one of the Jewish former lepers who had been cleansed who comes back to give thanks, but a Samaritan. Earlier, as Jesus commenced his journey toward Jerusalem, he and his disciples had been made unwelcome in a Samaritan village. Jesus had sometimes himself been accused by the Jewish leaders of being a Samaritan. But now this Samaritan becomes one of many who had become followers of Jesus. We think of the Samaritan woman whom Jesus encountered at the well, who became an evangelist among her own people, and whom the Church honors as Saint Fratini, the enlightened one who spreads the light. In Saint Matthew's Gospel, Jesus promises to accompany his disciples in their work of preaching and baptizing and teaching to the end of the age. At the beginning of Saint Luke's second volume, the Acts of the Apostles, Jesus assures his disciples that they will be his witnesses, not to the end of the age, but to the ends of the earth. And the intermediate points include not only Judea, but also Samaria. Today's Gospel reading shows us that the Gospel, the good news embodied in Jesus Christ, the Son of God, who for us men and for our salvation came down from heaven and was incarnate of the Holy Spirit and the Virgin Mary and became man, is breaking free from its Jewish confinement and is already starting on its journey to Samaria and to the ends of the earth. We heard from Father Steve last week about Philip's proclamation of the Gospel to the Samaritans and their wholehearted reception of that message and of the Holy Spirit. Why does the book of Acts end with Paul in Rome? Why does it not describe further progress of the Gospel? It may well be that St. Luke considered that Rome was the end of the earth, but God knew that that was not the end. And so the Gospel has continued its transforming journey throughout the Roman Empire and beyond, to England and Ireland and Friesland and Kiev and all of Russia and Siberia and Alaska and Western Michigan, and even, as I heard on Ancient Faith Radio only yesterday, to Oceania, places such as Fiji and Samoa and Tonga. The light of the Gospel continues to spread. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.